Hey guys, Jake here on When Books Collide. I'm here with guest Daniel Segura, and he's going to be talking about his book, Quantum Reality.
Hey guys, so I'm Daniel Segura. I'm a student in Ms. McGinnis's third period English class. And today I want to be talking about the book that I chose for my second semester Independent Reading book. And as Jake said, it's Quantum Reality. Quantum Reality is a book by Nick Herber, and he's a really well-known physicist and author for creating research for several theories and statements all throughout the physics community.
Wow, nice. What's the genre of the book?
This book is mainly nonfiction, but it falls under the subgenre of science and technology. And he really emphasizes a lot about physics and just really trying to hammer down on like those theories about what life is and reality is really like.
So obviously this is probably a pretty hard read. What kind of people would you recommend this book for?
This book, you don't really need to know a lot of physics for it, because he really tries to give you a lot of resources and information. Like, he gives you a lot of the physicists that did all this research. He gives you all the resources, all the dates, and all the places that you can go and search for this information for yourself.
So everything you need is pretty much in the book when you get it.
Yeah. The only thing I'd really recommend is that you need to have time and sit down with like a computer, because there's going to be a lot of different verbiage and a lot of different nouns that you may not be familiar to, but can really offer a lot when you just invest some time into it.
All right, good to know. How'd you come across this?
So personally, I'm a really big fan about philosophy and existential fiction. So that really tries to deal with a lot about life, existence, reality. Yeah. And so since I already read a book on philosophy last semester, I figured that this semester I would want to take a dive more into the scientific, technological side of things.
Nice.
How that goes.
Must be a good connection. How did that go? How are you enjoying that so far?
So overall, the beginning of the book was very painful to read. It was very difficult. But he started briefing it well after the preface.
Yeah.
Once he started getting into the first chapter, he was starting to explain what quantum reality really is, what quantum physics is really about, what it's trying to prove, and a lot of what it has missing.
So you want to kind of explain for the people who don't know what quantum physics is kind of about, like what the whole idea or the basics of it is?
So quantum physics is kind of just an alternative way of looking at our own life at this moment, because a lot of our life can be searched back to physics and gravity and planets and how water is like what we need to live.
Yeah.
And so with quantum reality, you kind of explore more of that alternative, let's say, universe that has a different meaning to everything that we know at this moment, because a lot of physicists and scientists, like Albert Einstein, for instance, was a very big scientist, not at the forefront of this, but near like the middle of the exploration of all of physics. He was really trying to hammer down of one of the realities of how multi-dimensions and how that's a valid point, but since there isn't anything to completely back up everything, he considers it incomplete. Therefore, a lot of what this physics is about is saying how there's one world, the universe that we live in, the universe that we know, everything that's happening, and the decisions that happen in this universe. Quantum physics and quantum realities trying to go more towards all the possibilities that could have happened and how there's multi-universes that are open at the moment but that get closed after a certain decision is made in this universe. So it's kind of like this universe is predetermining everything else that happens out in the world. Like this, if I choose to drink some water, that closes out another universe of me not drinking water and how the outcome of that could affect the rest of my day.
Okay.
And a lot of that is really just featured through all the physicists that he really tries to accentuate here in this book. And then one of the most fascinating things was that a lot of these physicists say that a lot of their theories aren't wrong, but rather incomplete. So you can't prove something wrong if it hasn't been finished yet and hasn't been told yet. But the most interesting thing about all of this is that nobody knows what's right from wrong in this. They only know going forward and what can potentially happen.
So it's like a work in progress. Yeah. They're just building as they go.
Yeah. They're still building as they go.
Nice. So is this book really focused only on the author's opinions and his own theories, or is this covering multiple peoples?
This is covering an array of scientists from the 17th century up to modern day. You have several different dates, times, and time periods in which he explains what they had available to them, what they didn't have available to them, and what they had to work with at the moment, and how future scientists and physicists have worked on it and built upon other physicists' ideas.
Okay, that's good. For some of the readers, what would you kind of describe the difficulty? Like, was it easy to understand, or is it, like, hard? Is it difficult? Like, do you have to be a higher level reader to understand this book, or...
I'd say you definitely need to be in that high school to college student range for this book. But what the real difficulty is about this book is the drive to want to learn and know what it's talking about. Because it's not a story that's like, oh, hey, so this guy murdered this person, he's going to murder somebody next. Like, no, this is like, so this happened in this time, and this happened next, and next, and next. What do you think could happen next? What do you think about this scientist? What do you think about this physicist? What about his idea, his reality? Like the scientist Bohr, Bohr has held two places in the top eight theories for this quantum reality. And a lot of what he tries to say gets destroyed by other theories. But since those other theories don't know what's correct, and nor does Bohr, then you really can't tell and disown any of those theories whatsoever. So wanting to know what's happening and wanting to understand why they say this and why they say that is really the drive of what makes this an easy book to read versus a difficult book to read.
So you think it's more of the strive for knowledge, not as much just older or younger?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, good. How big is this book?
This book is only 290 pages, which is pretty shocking for the amount of information you can find in this.
Compact, but quality over quantity?
100%, yeah. This guy's
good.
Amazing.
Did you like the book? Have you enjoyed it? Or do you think it's... or how do you find it?
So, personally for me, I feel the first read, or like the first time you read this book, it's going to be very... underwhelming. You're going to be left with a lot of questions. You're going to want to question a lot of things that are said in this book. And personally, I feel like the only way to fix those things is just go back and do more research on it. Like, see what he offers you and go deeper into the information. Don't just go to Wikipedia, go to scholars who have written reviews and like essays on this. Like, just so, go more.
So it sounds like this book kind of encourages you to find your own answers, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you recommend this book? Do you think it's a good book for anyone to read, or do you think, what kind of people do you think should read this book?
If we're talking about like the youth, I'd say those who are really trying to figure out what life's about, and those who really enjoy going into STEM careers, because a lot of this is going into chemistry and physics and philosophy, and a lot of that really requires a lot of patience and a lot of time to understand and be able to consume all the information. Because what a lot of people don't know, and what Nick Herbert has said himself, is that science is like a cookbook. And everything that science has to offer, all those theories, is just merely a recipe to, like, understand and to know how to deal with natural phenomena that's happening in the world at the moment. And he really tries to tell us that there's a lot that we do know, but there's so much more that we don't even know what's happening at the moment.
Alright. Now, I got one more question for you before we end our conversation here. If we had Nick Herbert right here with us right now, what would you want to say to him?
I think I'd tell him that in his book on page 215, when he was talking about Bell's theorem, that how Pythagorean theorem is easier to understand, is harder to understand than quantum reality, I'd 100% disagree with him.
Yeah.
His book offers so much information and so much space to explore that I feel like it is unrelatable to how much he's given, like, these 290 pages.
Wow. What if I told you he's outside that door right now?
I'd want to have a debate with him, 100%.
Okay, well, unfortunately, he's not. Unfortunately. Do you have any wisdom that you've gotten from this book that you'd like to leave us with?
I'd say keep dreaming, because there's a lot of limitations in our world, but there's also a lot of time for exploration and moments to break those limitations and to break those boundaries and to really try and get out of that box of like, oh, you can never fly as a human being. Like, you want to dream and you want to strive to understand how realities work and how physics works and how it can help you become a productive member of society.
Well said. Well, I appreciate you coming out here. I look forward to hearing about your next book the next time you're back, and I hope you have a good one.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey guys, welcome back to When Books Collide. Here, I'm your host, Daniel Segura, and I'm here with my special guest, Jake.
Hi, I'm Jake, and the series I've been reading is Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, so Jake, before we start off with this series, how many books are in this series?
This is a 14-book series, not including, like, the background, like lore books and stuff like that. If you include those, it's like 17, 18 books.
Wow. So I'm guessing it's a pretty extensive story talking about today?
The story goes, it's incredible how detailed every scene in this book is. It has its imaginary country, and it goes through everywhere in this said country.
Pretty awesome. I'm excited to hear about it. So, out of these 14 books, can we assume you've read all of them, or how many have you read so far?
I'm on the fifth book right now. I do plan on reading all of them, though. There's just something about them. They manage to keep your attention once you start reading, and you can't put it down.
All right, that sounds pretty cool. I'm pretty excited to go into it. So, what type of genre is this book that you're reading?
This is a fictional genre. It focuses a lot on, there's a lot of symbolism towards other, mythological stuff. Like, you have one of the main creatures in this book are called Dark Hounds, and they're really symbolic of Cerberus, which is the three-headed dog in Greek mythology that guards the underworld. And there's a lot of stuff kind of like that. Like, the main character, Randall Althor, he has the name Thor. In his last name is Althor. He has sort of lightning. There's this thing in the book called the power, and I'll get into that a bit later and explain the meaning behind his name.
So the inspiration for this book comes a lot through mythology, and not just like Greek mythology. It can come from Norse mythology, Greek mythology, Roman mythology, all of that.
Yeah, you can see there's plenty of symbolism representative of so many different beliefs and ethnicities. A lot of the darker, there's a side that pretty much the dark, there's enemies in the book called Trollocs. They're really reminiscent of Nordic Vikings, like all the classic stuff like that. And you can see it in the book when you read it. Like, it'll remind you of them.
Alright, so you ready to dive into this book?
I am.
Alright, so first thing, how did you find the entire plot, the entire beginning of this story, and how it developed up to book 5?
The first book is called The Eye of the World. And while I was reading it, I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of... Because the first book is obviously, it's going... Since this is such an extensive series, the first book is lots and lots of character development.
Yeah.
There's 14 books, and the majority of it, he gets out in the first book. It covers a lot of... it pretty much explains the backstory. It shows we go from them being kids and living in their town, their little town, like, it's like a little middle of nowhere town. They're away from everyone else. The kingdom's forgotten, really, that they exist out there. Like, they're just, it's like a backwater, kind of. They're just there. But we go from that to this, these three boys that grow up in a small town called Edmondsfield into one of them becoming what's called the Dragon Reborn.
Yeah, and so from books 1 through 5, what's the kind of perspective we're looking at this entire story? Is it a main character? Is it an array of characters? The author, a narrator?
So the thing I love about this book is that you don't stick with one character. This book has about seven characters that you're switching between perspectives all the time. And that's only including, like, the main characters. At the beginning of every few chapters, sometimes they'll switch into, like, a minor character's perspective, and you'll see things from their point of view. So it never gets boring. It's never just kind of dragging on with the same person. So if someone's, like, going on, like, a month-long travel to get across to a different city, you'll switch to someone else's perspective, and you'll be reading what they're doing and learning what they're doing in that time the person's traveling.
So you're kind of getting just the whole rundown of different perspective of, like, let's say I'm going to California, you'll get the rundown of how my parent experienced this trip, yeah. How this other character experienced that, where he went after this, all of those different types of details that leave a reader kind of like wanting more.
Yeah, yeah. So, because the three main characters in the book, excuse me, three main characters, there's Rand Althor, Perrin Matthias, and Matthew Thorson.
All right.
And it's just interesting. You come with these three kids, and you watch them. It's like when you grow up with something, you see them grow up while you're reading. You see them mature. You see them turn from, like, childish kids playing pranks and games. You see them becoming, like, leaders of cities, and you see, like, the fate hanging on their hands, and you can see them breaking down, and you see, like, the stress. Like, you just feel it.
So there's a lot of development going on, and hence that's why there's, like, 14 books you need to read in order to understand.
I would say this book is based on development. That's the prime factor in this book. That's what makes it so good, is because it never stops developing. You watch your character grow as if it's like it's like having a puppy. You have your dog for like 10 years. You watch him turn from the little puppy that you need to raise into a full-grown dog in 10 years. Like, it's kind of that same feeling. Like, you watch him grow up, and it's just like, it's kind of just crazy because it's all condensed just into the book.
With this way of development, would you say the tone of this story would be more towards on the funny side, serious side? Like, how does the tone affect the development all throughout the story?
The tone is definitely not funny. It's more of, it's not a funny story. There's funny moments, like moments you'll be like, oh, that's funny, nice. But it's mostly, it's focusing, a lot of the later books, at least that I'm on, are kind of covering the stress that's on these three characters, because they have the weight of being what they call in the story, they call it Tavern, which is string. The main idea in the book, one of the, like, it's not a faith, but it's kind of like a saying or belief, is the wheel of time weaves on. So it's one of them is the wheel of time turns and ages come and pass. What was, what will be, and what is, yet may fall under the shadow. Let the dragon ride again on the wheels of time, on the winds of time, sorry. And this is kind of a lot of, that's kind of like the key thing in the book. Because the wheel, the idea of it's, is that it's weaving a tapestry, sort of.
Okay.
It's like a, what do you call that, a spinning wheel?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. And each tavern means string. Anyone that's tavern means they're significant in the world. their significant thread in that tapestry, and they will pull the other parts of that tapestry together to form a whole. So the idea is that the dragon is kind of he's what ties it all together.
Yeah.
He will be weaved into reality over and over again until what needs to happen happens.
So that somewhat abstract idea and that philosophical thought process, would you say that the vocabulary you can find in this series is approachable to any age, or what type of age are we looking at here?
I think anyone can read this book, because I'm no scholar. I'm not like English whiz or anything like that. But I read this and I can understand everything they're saying in here. Of course, there's some words where it's like you see, and they're kind of like they're from different origins, but you can get the meaning of them. Like you'll understand as it goes on what each thing is for.
So it's written very efficiently for that person who just wants to get into a very good story.
I think it's written for everyone, because there's stuff in here that anyone. There, if you're familiar with the sort of fictional kind, like the style, the theme of like fictional worlds, you'll recognize a lot of stuff in here, and it'll be like remind you of home. Like you'll remember it, and you'll be like, "Oh, I remember seeing this here."
Oh, that's pretty awesome. So you could say it's like a glimpse of like your childhood. Like, oh, hey, I remember dreaming about this. Like, it's pretty awesome to see it.
Kind of, yeah. It's
going back.
It feels familiar when you're reading it, if you have a specific taste towards the fictional genre. All
right, so going back to this book, what made you come across this book? Because it seems like you really enjoy it and have a lot of memorable like nostalgia from it.
I wanted, originally, when I was going to choose my reading book, I was going to read Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire, because I've always been a fan of Game of Thrones. Yeah. But I talked to Mr. Radzak, actually, and he recommended the Wheel of Time series, because Game of Thrones was loosely... It wasn't based off of, but you can see the aspects of Wheel of Time in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, you can see, like, there's the hero. In Game of Thrones, there's, like, a hero called Azor Ahai.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the person that kind of saves them, like, stops the invasion of the enemy in that show.
Yeah.
That's what the Dragon Reborn is, pretty much, in this. The Dragon Reborn is there to stop the... what they call sort of the Dark Lord, or like the Lord of the Grave. He's sort of just like the dark figure. He's like the main antagonist.
Yeah.
And Rand Althor, as the protagonist, his job is to stop him.
Cool. So overall, I can see you really have dove into this series completely, like head in all the way. Would there be any quotes, anything specific that you really enjoyed out of this entire book that you kind of want us readers to know as like a little spoiler?
Nothing that's really related to the story, because the story is so like rich and there's so much in it that you can't explain it with a single quote. Like, there's too much to even explain with, like, you can give me 3 hours and I can explain the entire story. It's just that full. But one quote that I did read that I think I found funny, I thought it applies to real life just as much as the story, was, "Don't go looking for trouble when there isn't any. They'll only bring you one thing, and that's trouble." Which I think is a significant thing for everyone, really.
Yeah. And overall, so I've heard, we've had like a previous conversation to this, that the author that originally started this died, and that now somebody had officially like finished off the series because it was left off near the end of the series.
Yeah, the author originally, his name is Robert Jordan. He made to book 13, which he titled Towers of Midnight. And he passed due to illness, old age, that like illness that comes with old age.
Mm-hmm.
After that, his book was kind of left unresolved for a year, and a younger writer named Brandon Sanderson actually got the rights to finish the book, and he wrote the 14th book and the sort of the three books that...
The lore books?
Yeah, the lore books. So.
Okay.
The lore books that come beforehand that explain even more stuff before. But he titled the 14th book A Memory of Light, and he actually has a character in that book that he based off of Robert Jordan. And I think Brandon Sanderson, he did a great job finishing up the incredible story that Robert Jordan started.
So if you were to have a conversation between Robert Jordan and the person who finished off the series, what do you think that conversation would consist of, and what would you want to add into the conversation?
I would just thank them for it. I think this book, I'm like, this isn't even me trying to fit in, like, try and just make up, like, go with it. I legitimately like this book. I think this is one of the best books I've read. I'm like, when I get home, I'm excited because I have time to read this book. I take time out of my personal day to read this stuff because it's some of the best writing I've ever seen.
So you'd want to express just all the gratification.
I just thank him for his efforts and just his dedication to a series. I mean, 14 books that are usually more than 1,000 pages is quite a feat. And all of them, the amount of detail and effort he puts into them, like, nothing else to say about it.
I'm going to cut us off now and say thank you for your time. Thank you for taking us into the mind of Robert Jordan and how he's been able to infiltrate your mind and give you all of that freedom.
No problem. Glad to be here.